And start. That's it. Click the record button. We're live. We've started. Are we going to call every episode from now on "You Start by Starting" like episode 2? Because you really do start by starting. That's from the wise. Those are the wise words of Betty Carter, and I mentioned that on the last episode. And I'm not going to mention it anymore. And that's it. Oscar Guy here. How's it going, y'all? Welcome to the Oscar Guy Here podcast. Episode 3. Thanks for listening. Thanks for checking in. Man, do we have a lot to cover today. We got a lot. A lot happened since September the 12th. Today is now, it's September the 19th. And gee willikers, did a lot of things happen. So TIFF is done. TIFF happened. The winners were announced. And yeah, I got something to say about that. We'll get there when we get there, but wow. Yeah, we'll get there when we get there. That's all I'll say right now. But we'll be talking about the TIFF winners. TIFF meaning the Toronto International Film Festival, to the layman. I know we have some layman's listening in to this podcast, which there's nothing wrong with that. I know. I try to keep everyone informed, whether you're a cinephile or not, whether you're a follower of the award season or not. If you're subscribed to me, then you probably are. And if not, then you probably listen anyway. And I appreciate either of those types of people. But anyway, what the hell am I saying? So TIFF winners and some, you know, general news in the awards race and reactions from films that are coming out, trailers that are coming out, and films that I've watched. And that's where we'll start. Before getting into TIFF and everything else like that, I am going to let you know that I do have a new YouTube short out. It is episode 3 of my Operation Watchlist series, where I press a button on my website that tells me what to watch. It picks a random movie from my watch list, and I watch it. And I do a little YouTube short where I do it in real time, and I start recording when the credits roll, and I give you guys my brief thoughts. It's cool, it's quick, it's easy, it's fun. I'm clearing out the watch list, which it's probably the most fun and productive way to do it that I can think of. And we actually knocked out not one but two movies, but the only one that I actually did the process of going onto my website, clicking the button, is the first film I'm about to talk about. So Operation Watchlist episode 3 is out, and I watched Lion. The film from 2016, starring one Dev Patel and one Rooney Mara. I actually didn't know Rooney Mara was in this film until I started watching it. Nicole Kidman is also in it. Dev Patel and Nicole Kidman were nominated for supporting actor and actress, respectively, the year it came out. And it was also nominated for Best Original Screenplay, which was a surprise to me. Good for them. So I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. I didn't think it was great. As far as the filmmaking is concerned, and as far as the screenwriting and the presentation, as a film, it was good. It was fine. But it was acted very well. Dev Patel killed it. Nicole Kidman is great as always in a supporting role. Yeah, Dev Patel's a great actor, man. He's a great actor. He has this certain... He has this depth that not a lot of actors out there have. And he also came out with a movie this year called Monkey Man, which is kind of like a... Is it called Monkey Man? I think it's called Monkey Man. Yeah, Monkey Man. And he directed that, and it's apparently like a John Wick-esque action film that I hear is great, and he kind of, you know, bumps it up to 11 and goes all out in that. Haven't seen it, but He was very good in The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, the Wes Anderson short that won an Oscar this past year. He was also in Poison, the other Wes Anderson short, as well as The Green Knight. I have not seen The Green Knight yet. That is also on my watch list. But yeah, Line was pretty good. It was pretty good. Like I said, it was, you know, some of the average filmmaking aspects and whatnot kind of held it back a little bit for me, and I felt like Dev Patel and Nicole Kidman's performances were kind of trapped within that, if you will. But I nevertheless enjoyed it. I thought it was very informative and a very important story to tell. Regarding, you know, adoption, you know, kids who are adopted from uncertain, you know, situations, and then they grow up and they're like, okay, maybe I should try to dig into my childhood and maybe find my real parents and my real home. It deals with a lot of emotional complexities regarding that and the relationships of one who goes through that throughout the years. Like Rooney Mara plays his girlfriend in the film, and then Nicole Kidman's the surrogate mother who adopts him at a very young age. So it was interesting. It was interesting. I just felt that it was missing some things, but I nevertheless enjoyed it. And then I think a day or two later, I was catching up on videos from my boy Carsten Rundquist. Shout out to Carsten Rundquist, who is on YouTube. He's one of my favorite film adjacent YouTubers out there. I think he was the most followed Letterboxd account at some point until, I guess, Martin Scorsese joined Letterboxd or somebody. I don't remember, but shout out to Carsten. I don't know him. I would love to meet him one day. He's a great dude. Seems like a great dude. But I was watching his video. He did a video where he talks about his favorite film from every year that he's been alive. He was born in 1997. So from 1997 till 2023, he talks about each year, like every, you know what I mean? He picks a film from each year he's been alive. He picks his favorite one and like a runner-up as well. And his favorite film from 2017 was First Reformed, written and directed by Paul Schrader, the great Paul Schrader, writer of Taxi Driver and among other things, starring Ethan Hawke. And it's one of his favorite films of all time. He absolutely loves it. And it's been on my watch list for a very long time. This is an A24 film, thriller, 4x3 adjacent aspect ratio, looks very artistic, looks very captivating. And I was watching his video, and after I got done watching his video, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna watch First Reformed. You know, I got nothing else going on tonight. I'm just gonna put it on. So I rented it and I watched First Reformed, and man, holy crap. It completely stopped me dead in my tracks, that film. Stunning. Absolutely stunning. Absolutely haunting. Disturbing. But also has underlying dark humor, mostly through visual language. Because the way it is shot, the way Paul Schrader shot this movie, is not unlike Yasuhiro... Ozu, like an Ozu film. Yasujiro Ozu, Japanese filmmaker. He did Tokyo Story, which I still need to see. But I did watch Floating Weeds, Ozu's Floating Weeds, not too long ago, and I really liked it. But he has a visual language that is very unique. It kind of gives Wes Anderson a little bit. I think Wes Anderson was highly influenced by Ozu. Symmetrical, very rule of thirds placement of objects within frames, still frames, not a lot of moving cameras whatsoever, pretty much static camera shots all the time, specific aspect ratios, things of that nature. But First Reformed definitely was shot like an Ozu film, and that made things feel more claustrophobic in a way, and uncomfortable, but also it gave context to a lot of different objects and subjects within each frame of the film. And a lot of the sets are very bare bones and very minimal, like the house that Ethan Hawke's character lives in, the church that he practices in. Very bare bones, very little furniture, straight edges, like, it's very minimalist, this film, in the way it looks. And he uses that visual language to his advantage, not only to make the viewer uncomfortable, but to bring kind of this dark humor, to the surface, or underneath the surface, rather, depending on how you look at it. I don't know. But man, this movie was wild. Wild. Very evocative and cerebral. Just bone-chilling. Absolutely bone-chilling. The ending really stuck with me. It is one of those cut straight to black endings where your jaw is on the floor and you don't know what to think. And it's very up to interpretation, the entire film and the ending. And, it's crazy. It's essentially about this priest who, he's got trauma. He's got some trauma that he's dealing with, so he, drinks a lot, and he has a sickness that he's not really getting checked out for, and he's kind of, keeping that all inside and kind of presenting this facade that he's a priest that has everything together, and he, people go to him for help, but it's really him who needs all the help in the world. So he's wrestling with a lot of demons, despite being a priest. And this guy, this younger guy, who is a radical environmentalist, he talks to him, and he's asking for his help and prayer and everything like that, and then something happens, and I'm not going to reveal it, but it kind of makes things a little bit more complex and complicated, and Ethan Hawke's character kind of wrestles with his faith, and he kind of starts to lose it a little bit, and I think that's all. I think that's where I'm going to stop talking about it. I highly recommend this film. I want to watch it again. As tough of a watch as it is very disturbing. I do want to watch it again to pick it apart some more. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. So, Paul Schrader, shout out to Paul Schrader. I gotta watch some more of his films. Also, this film is basically Taxi Driver. If you ever seen Taxi Driver, this is pretty much Taxi Driver. If Travis Bickle was a priest instead of a taxi driver in New York City. There's a lot of parallels there. So that kind of sets things up for you if people want to dive into this thing. Really loved it. Really loved it. It's I haven't really stopped thinking about it since I think I watched it Monday. It's Thursday now, so it's been a few days and it's still in my mind. Really great. So that's everything I've watched since last podcast. Those are the only things I've watched. I would like to get maybe another Operation Watchlist episode out this coming week, maybe early next week, something like that, perhaps. I do have plans this weekend and plans next weekend, so going to be kind of slammed with personal stuff for a little bit, but that's what I've watched so far. Speaking of Ozu, I really need to get into Ozu a little bit more. I watched Floating Weeds and He had a short film called A Story of Floating Weeds that Floating Weeds is based on. He basically made a short film first, and then decades later, he made a full-length feature film based on the same concept, same story. I watched them both. They were both very good. But pretty much his magnum opus is a film called Tokyo Story, which came out in 1953, and that's on a lot of like cinephiles and film directors' top 10 lists of like all time. It's gotten, you know, in the top lists at AFI, or what was the Sight and Sound. Sight and Sound polls, which are like the end-all be-all, like greatest films of all time. It's ranked in the top 10 time and time again. So I've heard nothing but incredible things about it, and I do need to watch it. But he has some other films that are great, like Late Spring, Early Summer, Late Autumn, Good Morning, I hear is good. I think that was one of his last films. But yeah, Ozu, I would like to get into at some point, whenever that's going to be. Because things are about to get busy here. And I guess that's a good segue, because things are getting busy with the awards race. Let me tell you, man, the awards race this year, I know it really just started, but man, there's so many things that are up in the air right now. It is just it's a wild card this season so far. Like, nobody really knows what's going on. We're all just kind of guessing. There's a lot of films that are getting mixed reception, and there's some films that still need to come out, and we don't know. Like, is Gladiator 2 going to make a killing, or is it going to be a dud? Is Blitz going to be like Belfast, or is it going to be a dud? What the hell is September 5th? You know? Or September 5, whatever it is. We're about to talk about all these, but man, there's so many things happening. But I guess we'll start with the TIFF winners. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you guys remember last episode where I predicted what would win the TIFF Audience Award and what the two runner-ups would be. I don't even know what I said. I think I said the Wild Robot would win or place. Guess what? Didn't win, didn't place. What else did I say? Conclave? Didn't win, didn't place. Cool. Alright. Cool. What if I told you guys that the TIFF People's Choice Award winner of this year went to a film I have not once mentioned in one of my podcasts or in one of my videos, much less on my socials, on Instagram, on Twitter. I have not said a peep about this film just because I didn't think it was anything, you know? And I didn't really catch on to it, and I kind of sort of caught on to it right before TIFF ended, and I heard kind of people talking about it a little bit, but I didn't follow it closely enough, apparently, because The Life of Chuck won TIFF. What? The Life of Chuck? Bro, The Life of Chuck won TIFF. You kidding? The Mike Flanagan film, starring Tom Hiddleston and Mark Hamill's apparently in it. I mean, leave it to Chuck. Leave it to Chuck for throwing me off guard. Chuck threw me off guard, ladies and gentlemen. Oscar guy. You call yourself the Oscar guy? Look, I'm the Oscar guy. I ain't the TIFF guy. You know? I ain't the TIFF guy. Maybe at some point I'll be the TIFF guy once I get a few more years under my belt. But man, The Life of Chuck won TIFF. And that, I woke up to that Sunday morning and I was immediately ashamed of myself for not seeing this coming. Not even giving it the benefit of the doubt. I wasn't even talking about this film. It was just in the back burner. It was in the back burner, dude. It was stashed away in my garage, as far as I know. Jeez. So, yeah, The Life of Chuck. Won TIFF. It just won over the audience. even people who have seen it doesn't they don't really see it as a awards player or an Oscar contender. But let me tell you guys, whoever wins TIFF, if you win TIFF, it is pretty much an unbreakable stat for the past, I want to say, at least two decades. If you win TIFF, you're nominated for Best Picture. That is a statistic fact. Maybe this year will be the year where the stat will break and it won't get in, but this is very big. So I got to start considering The Life of Chuck in my predictions, at least for Best Picture and Best Original Screenplay? Adapted Screenplay? I don't even know. At the minimum, picture and screenplay package. Just to have that considered, you know? And if it does eventually catch on for the awards precursors, like Golden Globes, Critics' Choice, maybe even SAG, and the guilds later on in the season, then yeah, it'll probably show up at the Oscars. But from what I said before, people are saying that it's like not really an Oscars film, but it's very good. It just won the heart. It's a very heartwarming film about the beauty of life and how short it is, and it's bittersweet, and it kind of chronicles this man named Chuck. And it's the story is kind of told backwards. I think it starts like at his, not his death, but like after he died. And apparently it starts where it's like this post-apocalyptic thing. And there's like flyers everywhere about him. It's like, oh, we thank you, Chuck, for your service, blah, blah, blah. And then it goes backwards. And then it shows you like his life. And then it shows his upbringing. And it goes backwards. Basically, it's not Acts 1, 2, 3. It's 3, 2, 1. If that makes sense. But I hear it just really performed well with the audiences at TIFF. And I've heard pretty good things about it. There's some detractors out there who think it's a little corny, a little cheesy. But for people who do like it, they really, really love it. And there's apparently a dance sequence, like an RRR Natu-Natu-esque dance sequence in this film that absolutely goes gangbusters. I don't know what it entails, but there were mid-film applause after that sequence during the press screening at TIFF. And at press screenings, from what I hear, there are barely any. That just doesn't happen. Even applause at the end of films don't really happen at press screenings. So it's really striking a chord with people. And the thing is, this film, as of this recording, does not even have a distributor yet. We don't even know if it's coming out this year. It might not even come out in time for the award season. So who knows? Somebody might pick it up tomorrow. But even if somebody does pick it up, they got to release it in time. And then when they release it in time, then we'll start to seriously consider it for awards conversation. But best case scenario, I'm thinking Best Picture, screenplay. Those are the two surefire things. I've heard that Mark Hamill gives a really inspiring and very impressive monologue near the end of the film. Some people were even saying that he's kind of pulling off like a Judd Hirsch in The Fabelmans type thing where he just kind of steals the show. And it might be enough for him to get some nominations along the way. So some people were like predicting him for Best Supporting Actor. I don't really believe it until I either A, start seeing more about this film, or see a trailer, or a clip, or if I see the movie altogether. I don't know. But like I said, picture, screenplay, surefire things. Maybe, I don't think it really has a shot in Tex. I don't know. But man, I just want to say I apologize for not seeing this coming. I can't believe it. The Life of Chuck. The Life of Chuck. Chuck. Chuck caught me off guard, folks. And you know what we do? We move on. So, The two runners-up at TIFF. So every TIFF, there's a winner, and then there's two runners-up. The first runner-up was Emilia Perez. I've heard great things about Emilia Perez. It performed very well at the Cannes Film Festival. Won Best Actress for the ensemble of actresses in the film. There are some detractors here and there, but I hear it's great. It plays to an audience very well. It's very bold. It's very daring. It tries to do a lot of things. It's a musical. It's a crime thriller. It's a trans story, or a queer story, rather, that is connecting with a lot of people. Netflix has it. They're probably going to campaign it into the ground. And not only that, France has selected Emilia Perez as their submission for Best International Feature this year. So not only did it get runner-up at TIFF, it got selected for International Feature, and it's doing very well. This is going to show up. This is going to show up at the Oscars, for sure. Picture, maybe even director, for Audiard. What's his name? Emilia Perez film. Jacques Audiard. Sorry, French is terrible. My French sucks. Jacques Audiard. Sorry. Every time I say a French word, I have to apologize. But yeah, yeah, man, it's based on Audiard's own opera libretto of the same name. Carla Sofia Gascon, who is Emilia Perez in the film, is going to be campaigned as in lead actress. Zoe Saldana and Selena Gomez will be campaigned in supporting actress, I believe. So, actress, one, possibly two supporting actresses, picture, possibly director, screenplay, I'm sure that's pretty much locked. A song nomination or two, maybe even score. Some text here and there, maybe cinematography, editing. Sure, this can all happen. It might even get close to 10 nominations. So that got second place at TIFF. And I'm not sure how many screenings that had. I think it had quite a bit of screenings. So Emilia Perez, watch out for them. Watch out for that film. I'm going to be including it in a lot of my predictions coming up. Second runner-up at TIFF was Anora, the Palme d'Or winner, the Sean Baker film. I've heard nothing but raves from this. To be honest, I think it's the best picture frontrunner, even over Sing Sing and some of these other films. Probably even The Brutalist. I've heard incredible things about it, and the fact that it placed at TIFF with so little screenings, it didn't really have that many screenings at TIFF. There were maybe, I don't know, maybe they added some screenings, but from what I remember, the screenings were definitely in the lower end of the single digits, maybe 5-6 at the very most, which is pretty low for screenings at TIFF, and yet it's still placed, just based on how good it is, how much people like it, the word of mouth, its reputation. It's cooking. Anora is cooking, as the kids are saying these days. Can't wait to see it. I love Sean Baker's films. This is apparently his best so far. And yeah, it placed. And it is absolutely showing up at the Oscars. So it's funny that I'm saying, you know, Anora and what was the other one? Emilia Perez. They're definitely showing up at the Oscars. But then the winner, The Life of Chuck, it's still on the fence. But, dude, it won, dude. It won, TIFF. What are we talking about here? You see what I mean? You see what I mean? I mean, some of these developments are really messing me up, man. Crazy. TIFF. Man, I woke up Sunday morning to all this news, and I was like, man, I got some work to do, man. So, yeah. There you go. That's what won TIFF, ladies and gentlemen. And TIFF is gone, done, absolutely done. And the next major festival that is about to occur is NIFF, the New York Film Festival, and that starts, I think, in maybe a week or two. And Blitz will be showing there, Steve McQueen's Blitz. That is being premiered at the London Film Festival, I believe. But it is, I believe, the closing night film at NIFF this year. And while we're at it, a trailer dropped for Blitz, I think, either yesterday or today. I think it dropped today, actually. And it looks pretty good. Saoirse Ronan's in it. You know, production-wise, it looks very impressive. You know, a lot of action set pieces, a lot of really impressive costume work. It looks pretty good. I mean, the trailer, I don't think, is doing the movie justice, maybe, because the trailer is just kind of this run-of-the-mill... You know, it's pretty much every trailer you've ever seen. But I don't know. Some people seem to think that this is still, like, a lock for Best Picture. I can't really say anything until I see more of this. Until I see either clips or another trailer, or reactions. We're not going to know any reactions until at least next month, unless people, you know, get to see it early at NIFF. But no, it's the closing night film, so that doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, I need more. I need a little bit more to be completely convinced. But from what it looks like, the production looks pretty impressive. So it could be it could definitely show up in techs, in production design, particularly costume design, I think definitely. Production design, costume design, maybe cinematography, editing, and maybe it could sneak into screenplay and picture, and maybe that'll be that. And maybe Saoirse Ronan can get into supporting actress. I think she's going to be campaign and supporting and not lead. But we'll see. She didn't really do anything in the trailer that really sold me. But, you know, she's been nominated many times before. So, I don't know. I still need to see more. This might be a big year for her, between this and The Outrun, which I hear she's fantastic in. That's going to be her lead campaign push for this award season. But yeah, the Blitz trailer looked good to me. I just need to see a little bit more for me to be completely over the moon for it. Steve McQueen is directing it, and he is a wonderful director. Sure, maybe I should give him the benefit of the doubt, but again, gotta see more. So yeah, Blitz is premiering at NIFF. So that is going to be the next major film festival. And once that starts wrapping up, then we're kind of getting into the nitty-gritty, into the mid-award season, where a lot of these films are starting to come out in limited and wide release, which means I'm going to start seeing some of these films, and that's really where things are going to get really kicked off. So can't wait for that. A couple other things. Couple other orders of business here. The Room Next Door, the Golden Lion, the surprise Golden Lion winner at the Venice Film Festival. It was announced that both Tilda Swinton and Julianne Moore are going to be campaigned in lead actress. Quite a choice. Quite a choice that they made. Really making this lead actress category packed to the brim. So from what I've heard, if one of them can get in, I'm hearing that Tilda Swinton has a better shot based on her performance and her presence in the film. Julianne Moore is definitely more of a maybe. Kind of reminds me of the Kids are All Right situation where Annette Bening was nominated and not Julianne Moore, because perhaps they were both nominated, or both campaigned in lead, rather. So maybe that could happen again, or maybe they can both miss, where, you know, the film is just not going to perform. And, you know, I've heard rumblings about The Room Next Door where it's at least a serviceable film. Some people really love it, but it's definitely not much of an Oscars player. I don't know. There could be some conflicting opinions about that, but, you know, Pedro Almodovar, the director, he has been showing up everywhere in regards to the Oscars with his past films, Spanish-speaking films, like Parallel Mothers, and did he do Pain and Glory? I think he did, right? Pain and Glory. That was Almodovar as well. Yeah. Antonio Banderas was nominated for that. And a lot of other Almodovar films have made a killing at the Oscars. So, you know, perhaps that's bold of me to say that The Room Next Door might goose egg at the end of the day at the Oscars. But I don't know. That's just what I've heard. It's still going to receive a campaign. Maybe Alberto Iglesias will get nominated for score randomly again for a Almodovar film, which has happened before. Happened a couple years ago with Parallel Mothers. We'll see. But that was pretty crazy. Swinton and Moore both going lead, as opposed to Swinton going lead and Moore going supporting and vice versa. So that's something to maybe consider for next round of predictions. What else, man? What else? There's a movie called September 5th, that is coming out. I think Warner Brothers has it. Oh, no. Oh, who has it? September. I know I saw it somewhere. Oh, Paramount. Yeah. Paramount's got it. And Paramount also has Gladiator 2. Yes. Yeah, distributed by Paramount Pictures. So, I have heard some things about September 5. It's been performing very well at Venice. It performed very well at Venice. It is about the, I guess, the media coverage team responsible during the Olympics in 1972, where the Munich Olympic hostage crisis took place. And I hear it's pretty captivating. And some people are even saying that is going to be an Underdog Awards favorite, that they're going to campaign it. Paramount really just needs to, you know, either put eggs in this basket or in the Gladiator 2 basket, or both somehow. But really, typically studios will campaign one film into the ground. So perhaps they can just start campaigning this because of its subject matter. It's very important subject matter. It was rejected by TIFF, by the Toronto International Film Festival, because they didn't want to generate controversy in regards to the politics of the film, regarding, you know, the Israeli-Palestine conflict going on right now. So that's why they chose not to show it, because they just didn't want to ruffle feathers. Although I've looked into some early reviews of the film, and there was one reviewer that said it was purely apolitical, meaning that it didn't really choose a side. It was definitely from an objective point of view. So, I don't know. That's just something to consider. But I don't know. I did watch it. So I watched the trailer. I looked. My friend Jacob, shout out to Jacob, told me that there's a trailer out. I looked it up. All I could find was the German trailer. I found a German trailer. They spoke German, and I didn't know what they were saying, but I still got kind of the gist of it visually. It looks pretty good, man. It looked pretty good to me. The poster that I saw was kind of giving direct-to-DVD, direct-to-streaming vibes, so I don't know. But I saw the trailer, and It was a very well-made trailer, perhaps from a very well-made film. And I think the reviews so far are kind of mixed positive, but it did get a pretty good reception at Venice. But that's really all I know. But there are some people saying out there that it could do a sneak attack, and really, especially, like I said, if Paramount Pictures really campaigns it, maybe it'll happen. But just throwing it out there, it'll probably show up in my predictions next time around. Maybe, I don't know if I'm going to put it in my picture 10, best picture 10, but certainly below the line, you know, at least top 15 or something like that. I definitely have to go back to the drawing board in regards to my predictions pretty soon, now that the festivals are kind of giving us some more answers, not completely, but things are starting to line up just a little bit more. So yeah, September 5, just going to keep that in the back of my head. As far as other things, the new trailer for the new Bong Joon-ho film, Mickey 17, dropped this week as well. I watched it. It looks great. It's kind of like a romp, like a sci-fi space romp, kind of like a sci-fi dark comedy about this guy who keeps getting killed and brought back to life again, like as if he's like an android, hence the title of the film. His name is Mickey 17, like they're on the 17th iteration of this guy. Production wise it looks fantastic. Craft wise it looks great. We all trust Bong Joon-ho, one of the best filmmakers in the world for my money. And then of course Robert Pattinson as the titular Mickey, who, man, if you've seen the trailer, dude, this guy's range is insane. Like, completely erase the Robert Pattinson from Twilight from your memory. This guy is honestly probably one of the best and most versatile actors we have working today. Like, what an unbelievable talent this guy is. Just at the baseline, just his vocal register, like his vocal flexibility is absolutely unmatched. Like, you can see him in Good Time, or you could see him in The Lighthouse, or you could hear him in The Boy and the Heron, and you could hear him in this trailer. It's four completely different voices altogether, let alone physical acting. Unbelievable. I mean, he first speaks in this trailer, and I was like, wait, that's not Rob Pattinson, is it? And it is, bro. He's kind of doing this, like, kind of silly little creep guy twerp character who keeps getting killed. Oh man, oh, woe is me. Like, kind of like that, but much better, obviously. Yeah, I was like, dude, Rob Pattinson, holy crap. And if you've seen the English dub of Boy and the Heron, he plays the gray heron in the film, and Jesus, that's all I gotta say. He's a fantastic actor. So yeah, needless to say, I'm very stoked for Mickey 17. It is coming out in January, I think, like January 25th or something like that. I don't think it's gonna make the awards push. I don't think it'll maybe even perform at the Oscars at all, you know, much less this year or next year. I doubt it. But in any case, I'm very excited for it. I think it's even going to be in IMAX. So it's been on. It was apparently, if I look this up, it was the subject of some controversy recently because Bong Joon-ho was trying to ensure that his cut of the film was going to be the one that's released. I think they were like, they tried to cut some things, and they tried to like patch things up or rewrite it or reshoot it or something like that. And Bong Joon-ho was like, no, this is my film. Trust me. Like, do y'all know what Bong Joon-ho did in 2019? Do you know he achieved some insane things? We should trust the man. The man, his last film won 4 Oscars, including Best Picture. Look, that's it, man. That's all you need. So, yeah, Naomi Ackie's in it. Steven Yeun is in it. Toni Collette, Mark Ruffalo. What a cast, man. What a cast. Warner Brothers has it. Budget, $150 million. That's big. It's a big budget. Is it going to make its money? I don't know. I don't know. I hope so. I doubt it. But it's got to be marketed very well. It needs to be marketed very well in order to make back any kind of money like that these days. So yeah, this film has been... It's been in post-production for a while. And it was kind of put on hold. I think it was... Oh, yeah. Originally scheduled to be theatrically released in March 29th, 2024. So it was supposed to come out in March. This past March. But then the strikes happened. And that changed things. That delayed it indefinitely. But now it's coming out January 28th. No. January 31st, 28th in South Korea, 31st in the United States. So we got to wait a little bit, but... cinematography is by Darius Kanji. Nice. He was nominated for Bardo for his wonderful cinematography in that film. Music by Jung Jae-il. He did the music for Parasite and Broker and Squid Game as well. Interesting. I knew I recognized that name. Yeah. Rob Pattinson. In Rob Pattinson, we trust. In Bong Joon-ho, we trust. In Mickey 17, we trust. So that happened. What else, man? The Substance is coming out this weekend. Guess what? Not seeing it. Not seeing The Substance. Not seeing The Substance, and I've told y'all why. I don't know if you guys call. I mean, look, I only mentioned it a couple times. I think I mentioned it in the last episode of the podcast, and I mentioned it in my pre-predictions video that I did about a month ago. That I am not a body horror person. In fact, I pretty much avoid body horror. I ain't no body hoarder. I'm not a body horror person. I avoid it at all costs because I am squeamish when it comes to that stuff. You know, do I need to explain myself every time I say I'm not seeing The Substance? I'm just gonna say I've almost fainted at films before. And from what I've heard about The Substance, this is going to make me faint 5 times over. So I will not be seeing this film. And it's a shame because I've been hearing nothing but absolute raves about this film. It's apparently the most batshit insane, best, greatest body horror film of all time, ever. People are really hyping it up. It's kind of trending right now on Twitter, now that it's coming out this weekend. People are saying nothing but incredible things about it. So it's a shame that I'm not going to be seeing it, but not really, because I don't want to subject myself to that absurdity, this bodily absurdity. Yeah, I'm not all about that bodily absurdity, folks. Can't do it. But I mean, I just wanted to mention that the Substance reactions are through the roof from what I'm hearing. I hear the direction is incredible. It looks fantastic. The cinematography and editing is very creative. The vision is great. The concepts are definitely worth bringing to fruition, you know. Very well directed. Did I already say that? I guess. Demi Moore, I hear, is fantastic in a comeback role. Dennis Quaid, Margot Qualley. I hear it's incredible. So, to those of you who will be seeing it, I commend you. I'm happy for you. I enjoy yourselves, is all I'll say. Enjoy yourselves with that one, because I'm going to be staying far away and taking y'all's word for it. So, fast forward, you know, to February and March, where I'm making my final predictions, and people in the YouTube comments are going to be seeing, how can you say the substance going to win or going to lose if you haven't even seen it? I'm going to tell them to go listen to this podcast, man. Because I already done explained myself. You know what I'm saying? Not going to watch it. So, that being said, speaking of predictions, I might be predicting this to win makeup, because the practical effects and prosthetics and makeup work in this film, I hear, is probably the most impressive aspect of this film. That's saying a lot, because there's a lot of very impressive aspects of this film from what I've heard. If it gets shortlisted for makeup and hair, I think it's going to win. I don't really see any other film that's going to compete against it or beat it in any way, shape, or form. And that is even including Dune Part 2. That is even including Gladiator 2. It's got potential. It's got potential. And even with these reactions, I'm almost tempted to say that it probably even has some above-the-line potential as well. Am I going to put it in picture, man? Am I going to put it in picture? Are we going to start putting the substance in picture? Is the Academy going to touch this? Or are they going to recognize? Y'all better recognize the craft. That this film is something different, man. It's groundbreaking. You know? It's saying something. Will they see the meaning and the power in this film? Perhaps. But I don't know. It's the Academy after all. They got their tastes, they got their biases. I don't know, man. It might be wishful thinking to think that this will get any above the line stuff. But I don't know. This hype seems legit. This hype seems pretty legitimate. So picture, perhaps, director, perhaps, I don't know, maybe even best actress for Demi Moore, I don't know, maybe precursors, maybe here's a scenario, maybe it will make a killing with precursors, with critic circles, with critics' choice, with, you know, some other major precursors, probably, I don't know, Golden Globes might touch it, not sure. They've gotten cool this past year, so perhaps. The Makeup Guild might help it. So on its best day, it'll show up, or if not win makeup. Or it could go all the way and really surprise us and really perform well. And it be like the thing, like one of the main films, one of the main takeaways of 2024 in film is The Substance. And there are some other films too, like The Brutalist and Onora, and like those are probably the top two Best Picture frontrunners right now. Heard nothing but amazing things about those two. Also, The Brutalist, A24 picked it up, and they still haven't said when it's coming out. Hey, A24, you might want to get on that. Might want to get on that, buddy. You might want to get on that. We're all waiting. We're all looking at our invisible Rolexes as we speak, because that needs to come out soon, because number one, I need to see it. Number two, it's got to be in the awards conversation. You got to push this for awards, man. Brady Corbett, you deserve it. Adrian Brody, you deserve your second Oscar, man. I've heard that he gives the performance of his career even greater than his performance in the Oscar-winning the pianist. He might even win Best Actor. So, look, A24, you got work to do, man. If you're going to put all your eggs in one of y'all's, in one basket, the Brutalist basket is the basket that you got to put your eggs in. Queer is performing, you know, I mean, as far as A24 films, Queer is probably the most... The reception is very mixed on that film. Some people really love it. Some people, it doesn't work for them at all. I just don't think that's going to go anywhere. Outside of maybe Best Actor for Daniel Craig. That would be great. What else does A24 have? I need to consult the spreadsheet once again. Oh yeah, Baby Girl. We got to talk about Baby Girl too. So A24 is Baby Girl as well. So maybe they'll campaign that. Sing Sing, maybe that's dead, man. Maybe Sing Sing's dead. Are they gonna really push the Brutalist and not Sing Sing? I kind of talked about this already in my last episode. But if they're gonna release the Brutalist this year, they gotta get on it, man. They gotta get on it. They gotta get on it. God, A24's got a lot of films. They got the Brutalist. They got A Different Man, Baby Girl, Queer, and Sing Sing. Guys. Y'all are save some for the rest of us, man. Crazy. Jeez. But yeah, I can't wait to see The Brutalist. But while we're at it, Baby Girl, the Nicole Kidman and Harris Dickinson erotic thriller, I hear is fantastic. I hear it's fantastic. I hear Nicole Kidman gives one of her best performances, saying a lot. And I kind of want to see it first before I start like considering it for any awards prospects, because at the end of the day, regardless of whether it is an elevated film, from what I've heard it is, and how good the craft is and how well made it is, the Oscars, the Academy, they're not really about the erotic thrillers, man. They really aren't. So that's why I'm having reservations about Baby Girl performing at the end of the day at the Oscars. I mean, its surefire thing is probably Nicole Kidman, for sure, for Best Actress. But other than that, I need to see it perform with precursors. Before I can start believing in it as far as its performance at the Oscars. I'm not seeing it. But I will be seeing it, and by it, I mean the film that releases, I think, around Christmas. Some people are saying it's giving Eyes Wide Shut. I will absolutely love that movie. It's become an ironic Christmas tradition to watch that movie. I've watched it every Christmas for the last 2 years, and I'm gonna keep it going. So yeah, maybe that and Baby Girl do a double feature, a Baby Girl followed by Eyes Wide Shut double feature. That sounds like a blast. So yeah, does Queer have a release date yet? From what I've heard, I think Queer sounds like a film up my alley. It sounds like it's very evocative. It gets really weird at the end. So it doesn't have a release date yet. So, hey, A24, what's up? Y'all haven't released a release date for Queer, and y'all haven't released a release date for The Brutalist? Sup? A24 is at the ski resort right now. Y'all better get back home, get to work, start scheduling out these films so we can do our jobs, man. Come on. But yeah, man. That's what's been going on. That's what's been going on in the world of film and the awards race so far. So, there will probably be more developments by the next time I do a podcast. So I'll have more to talk about, but I think that's all I'm going to talk about. We've covered a lot. And, yeah, next order of business, I guess. I don't know. It might be kind of a lighter week, unless, you know, some of these announcements, new trailers drop, or some of these release date announcements start happening. Looking at you, A24. So, yeah, man. I would like to do another episode next week, around the same time, around the same day. I am going to be cutting it close because I am going to be going out of town a week from tonight, and will be out of town all weekend. So I'm not sure if I'm going to be getting a podcast out in time before then. So I might have to take a week off, meaning I will return for a new episode at the beginning of October. I don't know for sure yet, but I will probably post on my Instagram or something like that, or YouTube Shorts, making an announcement or something. I'm not sure. But yeah, that's what's going on. But in any case, thanks guys for listening. Thanks guys for listening to me babble on about all this. I hope y'all care. At least some of y'all probably care out there, or just some of y'all maybe just like hearing the sound of my voice or what. I don't know, man. But in any case, thank you for listening anyway. I really appreciate you guys. Please spread the word, you know, share this with your friends, share my YouTube channel with your friends, my podcast, you know, I'm trying to get myself out there because I want to get some of the subscribe and follower numbers up, man. That's going to be an initiative of mine this year for sure, because I've been kind of in a stagnant pattern, which, you know, I like to see some growth, you know, slow but steady is fine, but, you know, I like to get myself out there a little bit more. So, it would be much appreciated if you guys would help me in doing so. I would love you for it. I love you anyway. So yeah, that's going to be it for me, folks. I'll catch you on the flip. Have a good one. Have a good night. Have a good dinner. Have a good night's sleep. Have a good whatever. Till next time, folks. Oscar Guy is out.